Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
In exactly 3 months' time, the Olympic Games, Paris 2024, will start. The opening ceremony will be on the River Seine. It'll be the beginning of 16 days of competition, and Team Ireland is likely to have its biggest contingent ever, tracking towards a team of 120 athletes across about 14 sports. But how are those athletes preparing their bodies and their minds as they enter the final months before the Games? Well, here to tell us just that, we have three members of the team. Behind the team, we have Phil Moore, who's Director of Performance Sport, Sarah-Jane McDonnell, Head of Physiotherapy, and Eamon Flanagan, Head of Strength and Conditioning. You're all very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in at what I'm sure is a very busy time now. Phil, I might start with you on this. Is this really the crunch time, or is all the hard work done?
It's getting towards the crunch time now. So obviously the main focus right now actually is on qualification for the Games. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the Games just happens in July. There's a long tail in. So we've been preparing since Tokyo, since we came back, really.
Right.
So it's
been a long road.
It's a 3 or 4 year preparation program. It's kind of like a sprint at the end of a marathon. That's kind of
Will you tell me a little bit about your role then in the team and what it is that you do?
So I'm the lead for science and medicine support services for Team Ireland. So my main job is actually to get out of the way, because we have a team with huge expertise that work with these athletes year in, year out, and day in, day out. And so what we try and make sure is that the support staff that they're working with in their normal competitions when they're going to Europeans and Worlds are the same familiar faces that they'll see at the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a continuity of support right the way through.
And that's very important for the athletes, is it?
It's really important because, those are people they trust, they've built relationships with over the years. We know them, they know us. So you don't really want to be changing anything, really, as you come into the final stretch.
So as few variables as possible.
I suppose it's about controlling the controllables.
Yeah.
So we can control things that are within our grasp. So the Games itself is a huge circus. There's all sorts of stuff going on. There's oppositions. There's the French media. There's the home media. So there's lots of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's out with our control. So
and the French have decided this year, post COVID and everything else, that it's to be a big celebration.
Yeah.
So maybe the circus element is going to be a little more evident this time round.
Quite possibly, certainly compared to Tokyo. So any athlete who went to Tokyo as an Olympic experience hasn't really experienced the real Olympic Games because
yeah.
it was so locked down. Empty stadia and no Irish support really other than your own teammates, whereas we can anticipate this will be very different.
Well, Sarah-Jane, for you then as head of physiotherapy, I mean, do you come into the picture when something has gone wrong, or what is the role?
No, well, I probably have two roles around the Games time. So I have my everyday in the clinic preparation. So around that sort of athlete preparedness, we're always involved in the athlete picture. It's very collaborative. It's not just crisis management. So it's about that, making sure athletes are as available as possible to do their training rather than just managing when they can no longer train. So it's making sure that the appropriate support is around all the athletes tracking towards the Games. And then with my head of physiotherapy hat on for Games time itself is preparing the physios who are with those athletes for the reality of delivering support within a Games context, which can often be a little bit different than if you've travelled to a major championships like a World Championships with a broader support team, so that you're now in a multi-sport scenario. So you mm-hmm. will be potentially sharing clinic space with other physios from other sports.
So logistically, that can be tricky.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are the athletes coming to see the physio as a matter of course after training, after competing? How does it work?
It varies depending on the sport. It varies depending on the athletes. Some athletes have higher support needs, others don't. But it's very much you're consistently involved in the performance conversation. So it's quite collaborative. So it's not particularly intrusive or necessarily driven by the athlete. But it may be something that Eamon might say to me from S&C, oh, such and such mentioned that this hip was a little bit tight when they were in the gym today, you would probably then go and follow up with it. So the interaction with the athlete can come from many different sources.
So Eamon, you're like the spy for the physios.
Well, I wouldn't call it that quite like that, but we collaborate
and
we speak a lot. And I think athletes know that, and I think athletes take reassurance from knowing that like the support team around them is integrated.
Your job is interesting because strength and conditioning for one discipline must be very different. It would look very different to a rower and a runner, for example. Am I right on that one?
Yeah, can do. I think strength and conditioning ultimately is about trying to help the athlete prepare the physical qualities that they need to kind of thrive in their sport. And so there'll be very different demands, you know, on one end from endurance athletes up to more explosive sprint athletes, for example. The demands there might be very different. But there's probably as much variation within sports between athletes as there is between sports. So, you know, you might, even within the same sport, you mentioned rowing there, you might have one athlete who has very specific needs based on their profile, based on their history, maybe based on their injury history. And you might have another athlete who needs something very different. They might be towards the end of their career. They might have a significant injury history. The strength and conditioning work you do might be more collaborative with physiotherapy as opposed to trying to necessarily move the needle on high-level performance. So again, it's a very individualised approach as much as is possible.
And are the programmes changing a lot now as you get closer to the Games?
I think the biggest difference at the moment, Phil touched on at the beginning, is that at the moment there's qualified athletes and there's non-qualified athletes. So for those athletes who are qualified and have the security of that qualification, this kind of 3 months to go period becomes a period where you can have a real focus on developing physically, developing the tools you're going to need when it comes to the biggest event of maybe your career. And those athletes who have not yet qualified but are still in the picture, you know, some of them will have really meaningful events in the next 4 to 6 weeks that will decide whether they'll be at the Olympic Games or not. So for those athletes, the focus is a little bit more on management, maybe getting them to taper or to peak at the right time. And it's probably, it can be a slightly more conservative approach at this point.
That's a really difficult position for those athletes to be in, I would imagine, at this point. You're all nodding in agreement there with that one.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think that's where, I think, like Phil and Este touched on, that's probably where like the collaboration is really important, where it's not just a strength and conditioning coach setting a plan or a physiotherapist treating an injury. That's where like the sports coach, the wider support team, psychology is a huge component. That's where like the best programs and the most successful programs are the ones that probably leverage that integration the most.
Okay, and how much control do you have to exercise over the people that you're working with? I mean, you've got to make sure that they're eating properly, you'll have someone working on the nutrition side, that they're doing the work, Eamon, that you're asking them to do, and not overdoing it as well.
Yeah, I think...
Do they all listen to you, I suppose, is what I'm asking you.
Every athlete is different, and every program, every sport that we work with is quite different in terms of how they approach things, and some sports have a little bit more autonomy. You know, the athletes are given a little bit more autonomy than other sports, which maybe have to take a more squad or a more team-based approach. But ultimately, at this stage in the cycle, you know, doing the question there of doing too much, that's probably more of a risk. There's not too many lazy athletes at this stage.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
I can imagine.
You're not really standing over people. It's probably the opposite. It's probably trying to get people to...
Yeah, they need to be so careful, you know.
Yeah, and probably trying to get them to direct their attention in the areas that can have the most meaningful difference at this stage.
Yeah, and I suppose, Phil, you're there trying to coordinate all of that to make sure they're getting everything right, down to things like people asking them for tickets to the Olympics. I'm sure that's an issue as well for the athletes, is it?
Yeah, I suppose one of the biggest issues for athletes at the Olympic Games is dealing with the distractions that are outside of performance. So we do a fair bit of work with athletes and staff who are going to be going to the Games to prepare them for not just the event they're going to be in, but the bigger entourage and the big show that comes with the Olympic Games, and working out strategies to manage that ahead of time. So how they deal with social media, for example, is a huge issue.
Do you direct them on that?
We don't direct and we don't control. We are collaborators and supporters for those athletes. They'll make their own decisions ultimately, and usually with our coaches. But it's not an adversarial kind of relationship. We are very much We see ourselves as trusted partners with the sports and with those athletes.
Mm-hmm. But other distractions might come from, you know, friends, from family. And do some athletes decide to almost isolate themselves completely?
Some do. What we would hope is that every athlete's planned that journey as they're going into it. We support them to do that, to make the right choice for them. They're all different individuals. So some athletes will find social media contact and family contact really helpful, very supportive. Others will find it a distraction. So it's individual planning for the games experience that they want to have.
And I'm sure you're helping them make those decisions as well by having conversations with them, finding out what would suit them best.
Well, we have a team of psychologists and life skills advisors who are intimately involved with that kind of work with our athletes. And preparing for the games experience itself, but also for preparing for afterwards. Because a lot of athletes find the post-games period quite challenging. So if you've been to the biggest show you've ever been to in your life and you've achieved your life's dreams, that can
be... What do you do next?
Well, what do you do next? Exactly. So, and, you know, in this period of the last 3 months going to the games, if you ask an athlete what they're doing on the 20th of June, they'll probably be able to tell you morning and afternoon. It's very planned, everything's structured, and you come out of the games and the structure's gone. There's an empty diary, unless you've done the planning beforehand to make sure that you've got something going on.
So what do you say to them about that? You don't present them with a plan for afterwards, I'm sure, but you ask them...
We ask them what their plan is.
What their plan is.
Yeah. So what
and
next?
If they don't have a plan?
Even if they don't have a big plan, because often... big decisions about their career will depend on how they go at the Olympic Games. So even planning to review the performance and what next after the Games is part of planning. Go on holiday. So book a holiday now rather than wait till afterwards and wonder what to do. But actually do small bits of planning, even if you can't do the big picture piece. Do the small bits.
It's making me nervous talking to you all. We'll have to have you back maybe afterwards and see how you all got on. This is, I know, the big build-up and let's see how it all goes. All of our support is with all of you as you head off to Paris. Thank you so much for coming in. Lovely to have you with us. We're taking a break.
Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.